God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
Thanks, Brother Hutchings. Today, Brother Hutchings' daughter, Carol Rushton, our webmaster and historian, will be talking about a new book on one of the founders of this great nation, Samuel Adams, a man whom many see as the catalyst for the American Revolution. The book, which is entitled Samuel Adams, A Life, is written by Ira Stoll, and we'll be telling you how to get a copy later in the program. Brother Hutchings, Carol keeps you supplied with good books, doesn't she?
Thank you, Brother Jerry. For Father's Day, she gave me a book, Samuel Adams, A Life. It's one of the most interesting books because we all know about John Adams, who was the second president of the United States, and John Adams also edited the Declaration of Independence by Thomas Jefferson, and he improved it quite a bit. But we know more about John Adams than we do about Samuel Adams, yet Samuel Adams, in the earliest history, when our nation was struggling against England and the events that led up to the Revolution, he played a key role, and he was the most important person, or one of the most important persons, in protesting the heavy hand of England against the colonies. Also, he instigated protest. Although he was a tax collector, he initiated protest that led to the Boston Massacre and the Boston Tea Party. In fact, he was the first Tea Party person in the United States, and he instigated and promoted the colonies to go out and empty the British ships of tea and throw it overboard because they imposed a tax on tea. So Samuel Adams was a very important person. Could you give us just a little more history of Samuel Adams, Carol?
Okay. I think it's important to remember some of the events leading up to these taxes. And I think that's one thing that we forget. Britain had just ended a long war with France. They were heavily in debt. In fact, they had tried to impose a cider tax on the citizens of England, and that was not met very well. In fact, one person was thrown into the Tower of London for protesting this cider tax. So they felt that it would probably be easier to tax the colonies because a lot of the war with France had been done in the New World. And they thought, well, if we're going to protect the colonists from France and from some of maybe these other countries, they need to pay for our protection. So they started imposing things like a sugar tax. And actually, the tax reduced, this Sugar Act reduced the tax on sugar, but this time the British seriously intended to collect the tax. And it escalated into, as we've talked about, the Stamp Act, the Tea Act, and the Townsend Acts, and then what is called, after the Boston Tea Party, what the colonists called is the Intolerable Acts, which included the Boston Port Act, the Massachusetts Government Act, the Administration of Justice Act, the Quartering Act, which allowed British soldiers to take over homes and buildings of the colonists and house British troops in there, and that was not very popular. So Samuel Adams brought out, again, in a series of op-ed pieces that were published in local newspapers, why it was important to resist these taxes. And he said, "By the royal charter granted to our ancestors, the power of making laws for our internal government and levying taxes is vested in the General Assembly. And by the same charter, the inhabitants of this province are entitled to all the rights and privileges of natural, free-born subjects of Great Britain. The most essential rights of British subjects are those of being representative in the same body, which exercises the power of levying taxes upon them and of having their property tried by juries. These are the very pillars of the British Constitution founded in the common rights of mankind. In another op-ed piece, he said that the Charter of the Massachusetts Bay Colony secures to us all the English liberties, besides which we have some additional privileges which the common people there have not. And he goes on to talk about how the Puritans fled England from the yoke of tyranny. Now, when he talks about this, he's reminding us that the Americans, the early Americans, did not see themselves as Americans. They saw themselves as Englishmen, British subjects, and they were entitled to all the rights and privileges of British subjects, including representation in the General Assembly. They did not have representation in Parliament in London. And they said, we should not be taxed. We're loyal British subjects, and we should not be taxed without representation in Parliament. I often wonder if King George had just relented on this one thing and allowed representatives to be chosen and sent to Parliament from the American colonies, if it would have prevented an American Revolution and the split with Great Britain. Some of the things that Dad has referenced as Samuel Adams being very involved behind the Boston Tea Party, and indeed he was. When they heard of the Tea Act being passed in 1773, Samuel Adams and John Hancock met at the Liberty Tree at Hanover Square in Boston, and there such a crowd came around them that they had to move into a building. And they became involved in a resolution by the Boston Town Meeting to oppose this Tea Act, saying that it was intended to introduce arbitrary government and slavery. And they said it is the duty to oppose a violent attack upon the liberties of America. So when the first ship came to Boston, it was loaded with 114 chests of tea, and it arrived in Boston Harbor. And the deadline to unload the tea and pay the tax was December 17th. And it had arrived in November 28th, so that was less than a month. In another meeting, Samuel Adams, again, made a motion that the tea should not be unloaded from the ship. On December 11th, Adams told the ship's owner, "The ship must go. The people of Boston and the neighboring towns absolutely require it and expect it." So the owner of the ship appealed to the governor of Massachusetts, and who told him the ship would not be allowed to leave without unloading the tea. So it put the ship owner between a rock and a hard place. So nobody was going to relent. So when the ship owner, and a lot of the meetings were held in churches at this time. So the ship's owner went back to the church several days after that. And by that time, it was December 16th. And he told Sam Adams, "I'm sorry, but the governor will not relent." So Sam Adams is seen as giving the signal for the Boston Tea Party by getting up and saying, "This meeting can do nothing more to save the country." And that evidently was the signal for the men who were involved in the Tea Party to get up and go and change into their clothes and get up on the ship in the middle of the night and start throwing the tea overboard. And I don't know even to this day that anybody really knows who exactly were these Indians. But it's one of the famous incidents in American history. And even though Samuel Adams is probably too old to actually participate in it, he let everybody have it afterwards. He crowed about this in op-ed pieces in the local newspapers and really trumpeted it as a victory for the American colonists. Now, General Thomas Gage, who was the new governor of Massachusetts, did try to patch things up with Samuel Adams. And he wrote him a letter, and he tried to tell him to give up his fight with the British government. He said by changing his course, he would not only receive great personal advantages, but would thereby make his peace with the king. Now, Samuel Adams' reply we can just imagine what it was. And he said, I have long since made my peace with the King of Kings. No personal consideration shall induce me to abandon the righteous cause of my country. Tell Governor Gage it is the advice of Samuel Adams to him no longer to insult the feelings of an exasperated people. So Samuel Adams was a firebrand, and he would not back down. He stood on principle to the end. I wish we had more people like him in our Congress today, because I think we really need him.
Well, we have a lot of Tea Parties, meetings, and protests springing up across the United States. And it disturbs some people today, just like it disturbed old King George back then. And some of the royal appointees there in England. So don't be surprised if some people today don't like the Tea Parties. They didn't like the first Tea Party. But nevertheless, Adams is known as the first Tea Party organizer. Today, when you see the Tea Parties coming, we can see the spirit of Samuel Adams in them. And we can be thankful for the righteous indignation of Samuel Adams, just as the righteous indignation of many today are springing up in the Tea Party. And, you know, the ridiculous charges come up that the Tea Parties are a racist thing, which is ridiculous. What did Samuel Adams think about slavery?
Well, he was very, very opposed to slavery. And, again, I think it's a real testament to Samuel Adams that he put his faith into practice, and he put his money where his mouth was. He believed that the scriptures taught that slavery was an abomination, and he practiced it in his personal life. He practiced that as in his life as a legislature, as governor, in trying to get citizenship for black slaves and black people. And so I have the utmost respect for Samuel Adams. He certainly was ahead of his time. And I think his religious background had so much to do with it. His mother was a woman of very strong religious principles. Also, the book talks about how George Whitefield came from the Church of England over to the American colonies and preached to thousands and thousands of people. And many people feel that this great religious awakening in the early to middle 1700s was a forerunner to the American Revolution. And one of the people who heard George Whitefield was Samuel Adams. And it is evident that even though he was raised in a religious family, George Whitefield really made an impression upon Samuel Adams. And it really affected him in a very dramatic way. And it was not long after that that Samuel Adams joined the Brattle Street Church. So I think that his strong religious upbringing and also with George Whitefield coming over and preaching, he had a strong background on faith, on the Word of God, on the Scriptures. Some of his religious writings that I wanted to point out was in a letter to his wife. He said, I am so fully satisfied in the justice of our cause that I can confidently as well as devoutly pray that the righteous disposer of all things would succeed our enterprises. If he suffers us to be defeated in any or all of them, I shall believe it to be for the most wise and gracious purposes and shall heartily acquiesce in the divine disposal. And then he goes on and he writes her again and says, righteous heaven will surely smile on a cause so righteous as ours is. And our country, if it does its duty, will see an end to its oppressions. One thing I wanted to point out was some people criticize our founding fathers for using the supreme authority or the supreme judge, you know, or heaven's providence in referring to God. But in reading this book on Samuel Adams, Samuel Adams many times writes the same way, and he uses the same type of language. I think that was just their way at that time of talking about God. the men and women who lived back there had a great, not only strong faith, they had a great reverence and awe and fear of God. They had great respect, and they didn't talk about God flippantly. They approached him reverently. And I think this was just one of the ways they talked about God and reverenced him with such great, great respect. And I think certainly his faith permeated every area of his life. Even when he was governor of Massachusetts in his later years, he would issue proclamation after proclamation of thanksgiving. He would call the people to prayer, call a day of prayer and fasting. Not everybody appreciated this, but it's very interesting that as governor, there had already been, before he was governor, there had already been a tradition of having sermons on days of elections. And Samuel Adams continued this tradition. He would call, when election day came around, he would call on different pastors to give a sermon. And everybody came and heard the sermon. And sometimes they went on for an hour. And then the people would go vote. Can you imagine what would happen in our country if people on election day had to listen to a sermon before they went and voted? I think for one thing, it would make a big difference in the way people voted. But I also think that there would be probably a riot because our country has become so permeated with the secularism that people have forgotten the religious traditions of our country. And I'm glad that this book was written because it reminds us that at least some of our founding fathers had a strong religious conviction, and they believed that the founding of our country was based on religious principles, and that God gave us this country, he gave us our freedom.
I think it was in 1774 that King George III declared that the colonies were in open rebellion, and he offered amnesty to those men who would lay down their arms, and he would forgive their crime against England, and there'd be no charges brought to them, and they could all return to their homes, and so on and so on. And I think there was some relief also offered in that amnesty proposition. But there were two men that he didn't offer amnesty to. That was John Adams, and that was Samuel Adams and John Hancock, because he figured that they had gone too far in his offer to let them go free, and he made known his intention to hang them on the gallows. Samuel Adams, I think, truly earns the reputation or the title of being the founder of the Revolution, because as it's been noted in this book on Samuel Adams, others admitted that it had not been for Samuel Adams, there would have been no revolution, and there would have been no United States. The United States would have continued to be a colony of England. So it was through Samuel Adams, John Hancock, and others, but Samuel Adams is given the reputation of being the real motivator of the revolution that followed and the founding of our country. Of course, his cousin John Adams also had a leading role, served in the Revolutionary Army, and later president. But Samuel Adams was not someone to sit behind a desk. He was a man of action, and that's what he did. He got out and he stirred people up, and he led people, and he started the Boston Tea Party. And I think we can praise God for the tea parties that are springing up around the country today, because I think we need a moral revolution in this country, because there are things happening that defies Christian convictions and conscience in our country right now. And certainly, I think this book would be a treasure for your home library and for your children to read about such men of conviction and patriotism as Samuel Adams. Carol, do you have any further remarks?
Sure. Adams wrote extensively on liberal, and he has some great quotes that I would like to leave with today. There is no one thing which mankind is more passionately fond of, which they fight with more zeal for, which they possess with more anxious jealousy and fear of losing than liberty. Samuel Adams one time had said that liberty was the choicest gift that heaven has lent to man. Neither wisest constitution nor the wisest laws will secure the liberty and happiness of a people whose manners are universally corrupt. He also at one time said, it is our duty at all hazards to preserve the public liberty. Righteous heaven will graciously smile on every manly and rational attempt to secure the best of all of his gifts to man from the ravishing hand of lawless and brutal power. And I think that's one of the things that we can be so thankful for, is that Samuel Adams, while these taxes might seem minor in comparison to what we are going through today, Samuel Adams recognized the danger in them, and that if left or ignored, that they would continue to allow the British government to impose and ignore the liberties of the colonists. And he saw that threat to the liberties and freedoms of the Americans early, and he stood up and he defended them. And I wish that we had more Samuel Adams today. It's very interesting that you mentioned the tea parties that are going today. Michelle Bachmann in the House of Representatives just started a Tea Party caucus. So I think that we have lots of things to thank Samuel Adams for. And hopefully people are reading more about our founding fathers, and hopefully Samuel Adams will be the forgotten founder no more.
Well, thank you, Carol, for being with us. And again, I've enjoyed this book, and I'm sure that you will too. And here now is Brother Jerry to tell you how you may obtain a copy.
There are three ways to get this intriguing and informative book: phone, mail, or the Internet. Number to call is 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, Post Office Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008. The website is at swrc.com. The 338-page book is offered in appreciation of your $25 contribution in the U.S., $30 for Canadian listeners. Don't miss getting this biography about an amazing man who had a passion for God and for America. Call, write, or go online today for your copy of Samuel Adams, A Life by Ira Stoll. One copy for an offering of $25 in the U.S., $30 in Canada. Phone 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma 73008. The website is at swrc.com on the Internet. Our next Wake Up America conference will be at the Willow Valley Conference Center in Pennsylvania, October 28th through the 30th. We've invited some powerful speakers. Call for details, 800-652-1144. Next over most of these stations is a Bible in the News report. Be here tomorrow at this time when Brother Hutchings and Dr. Larry Spargimino talk about restoring temple worship in Israel on your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. It's time for Southwest Radio Ministries' Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program. With today's report, here is board member Jerry Tyson.
An article in the web service OneNewsNow.com, dated June 29, 2010, by Dr. Michael Yosef, poses a chilling warning, quoting, every freedom-loving person should be extremely alarmed at the dreadful trend of silencing Christians from the streets of London to the streets of Dearborn, Michigan. In both places, Christians were arrested and imprisoned for preaching the gospel on public streets in what Muslims consider to be Islamic territories. When four young Christian men were recently arrested and imprisoned in Dearborn, Michigan for witnessing to their faith at an Islamic festival, it was hailed as a victory in some Islamic circles because Sharia law has come to America. Never mind the First Amendment, this is the beginning of its demise by overwhelming Islamic ideology that is hell-bent on silencing Christians and Jews from spreading their faith. In Arab countries, where Christians make up a sizable minority, Christians are not allowed to speak of their faith outside of the church walls. Now it's beginning to happen in America's heartland. The silencing, humiliation, and reduction of Christian and Jews to second-class citizens is as old as Islam itself. This Islamic doctrine is known as the Dhimmis. It was articulated by Omar, the second successor of Muhammad. He articulated this doctrine when he invaded Christian lands in an effort to subjugate Christian residents who were captured by the sword. This is the third wave of jihad. The first wave was in the middle 700s. The second wave was by the Turks in the 1700s. In this third wave, Muslims believe they can advance by taking advantage of Western ignorance of their ideology, coupled with Western sympathies and a penchant for fairness. To add insult to injury, the Council of Islamic Nations is pushing hard in the United Nations to implement an international law that would outlaw the preaching of the gospel anywhere in the world. As if this is not chilling enough, the Dearborn incident is now considered to be a good omen for Islamic takeover. Unless freedom-loving people wake up now, their children will wake to discover that they are living under Sharia law. End of article. As the children of Israel came to the Promised Land, God instructed them to drive out the heathen as they advanced. Where they did not do so, they had conflict and problems. As Americans blindly allow our leaders to subvert our Constitution and laws, our ability to serve the Lord will be diminished. Matthew 16:18 encourages us, "Upon this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." For this, God's army, though, is not angels, but his true believers. The time is now to stand against Satan's hordes.
That's today's Bible in the News report, a presentation of Southwest Radio Ministries. These reports are published each month in a booklet. To get a complimentary copy, call, write, or visit our website. Phone 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. The website is at swrc.com. Join us for the next Your Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report.